So this is episode one of Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schleinkofer. And today I have as my guest host, Todd DeVoe from EM Weekly. And we're going to be talking about a little bit about my background, going to be comparing some things with my philosophy of civil defense and Todd's background in emergency management. So welcome to Civil Defense Radio, Todd.
Hey, Preston. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
Thanks for being here. It's nice to be online here, finally.
For sure.
It's been a long road trying to get things figured out and learn new things and getting all the tech stuff set up. It's learning curve. It sure is.
Oh, yeah. It's like anything new. You know, you got to kind of get the idea behind it. You got to pick it up and play with it and run with it. And eventually you master it, right?
Yeah. Hopefully in a couple months I'll have mastered everything and it'll be like old hat. Just like your show. You're over 100 now, right?
Yeah, we're dropping our 107th episode on March 14th, which is amazing. I can't believe we're there, and it's been a great ride, and I've gotten to meet great people like you, Preston, through it, and I think it's one of those things that I never thought was going to be what it was, and it's been an amazing time. The EM Weekly faithful are great people, and they reach out to me all the time, and we even have a chat room on Facebook where we kind of talk about things, and we're starting to do giveaways now, and got webinars that we're doing as well, and it's great. It's just growing exponentially. It's awesome.
Well, that's great. I had the pleasure of being interviewed by you and having that episode being broadcast out in the podcast world. That was quite an honor. I really appreciate that.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that we like to do at EM Weekly is looking for interesting topics and just different views of what it is with emergency management. You know, it's funny because we go through these times to where, you know, people in EM kind of get in this like little cluster and go, this is what we are, this is what we should be doing. And there's cool community groups that are out there, like yours, Civil Defense, that out there trying to do good community work, trying to be prepared. And I think it's like a different mentality, right? I mean, obviously, as somebody being prepared for disasters, you can't be that prepper guy in the bunker and thrive, right?
Right.
It doesn't work that way. You might survive for a little bit, but as far as the community, at some point you're going to have to rebuild and thrive, you know? So what you're doing as the civil defense type of idea, which obviously is the beginning of the 1950s civil defense or even before that, those concepts are true and tried, or have been tried out, shown to be true, that where each person in the neighborhood has a job, they do something well, and they're able to do together. One of the things that I did at Seal Beach when I was there is myself and this gentleman called Wink. His name's Winslow. We called him Wink. Winslow Chase. So Wink Chase and I created this program called Neighbor for Neighbor. And the idea behind it was like Neighborhood Watch. You go and as a city, we supported them, supported the neighborhoods, by coming up with some materials where they could take them and organize a neighborhood. We had a little tiny preparedness fair, if you will, like a block party preparedness fair. For each neighborhood that wanted to have one. And, you know, kind of just taught them and talked about the principles of CERT, encouraged them to go to CERT programs, community emergency response team, go to CERT programs, those type of things. And realistically, when I came across your website, I don't know how I remember exactly how I found you.
I think it was LinkedIn. I think it was through LinkedIn.
Okay, so I came across you through LinkedIn. I checked out your what you're doing. I go, wow, this is like the Neighbor for Neighbor program, but just on a larger scale, right?
Yeah.
That's why I reached out to you today. I'd like to talk to you about what you're doing, because I think it's very similar to those community caregivers. And now there's another program that's out there that's got national attention, very similar to Neighbor for Neighbor, called Map Your Neighborhood, which was created in Washington State.
Yes.
And
yes.
That's gone across the country. I think it's another great avenue. And I think as emergency managers, we're starting to understand that we can't do top-down preparedness. You know, there's an article in emergencymanagementmagazine.com regarding the fact that preparedness programs have failed.
Yes, I've got that. I've got that article.
Yeah. And so I think that stuff like what you're doing, Preston, with the civil defense concept, with the nonprofit that you created, and the radio show that you're putting on to encourage others to do civil defense preparedness, I think right now is in line with what FEMA is looking at. It's in line with where the people are in their mentality. And I think it's in line with emergency management. I don't think that there's any controversy between that.
Well, you know, we're going to be talking to emergency managers on this show, and as well as people in various communities who are working to build resiliency within their communities and beyond. So, you know, I call them civil defense organizations because that's exactly what civil defense does. It's a grassroots organization that goes out and helps their neighbors build resiliency, or, you know, I call it survival, because you have to survive whatever disaster strikes. So, you know, it could be man-made or natural disaster. And, you know, if it's severe enough, it's definitely life-threatening. We had, just a couple weeks ago, we had, some snow here in Virginia, and this one tree that we have, it got a little heavy on top and fell over onto the house. You know, that was a minor thing because it didn't cause any damage to the house. But, you know, I've got some very tall trees that if they fell, they would definitely cause some damage. So it could be as simple as that. But, you know, if you're organizing your neighborhood, like, you know, your Neighbor for Neighbor or Map Your Neighborhood, if you're organizing the neighborhood and something happens, then you know somebody's going to come over and say, hey, what's going on? Are you all right? Can I help? And things like that. You know, are you going to be able to stay in the house, or do you need to stay in our guest room? Things like that.
Right.
It helps.
It does help. And what's interesting is there's a PhD named Robert Putnam, and he's a sociologist. And he wrote a book back in, I want to say it's 2000, might have been 2000, somewhere in that time, but it might have been a little bit later than that. But anyway, he wrote this book called Bowling Alone. And I've talked about it on my show before, when I lecture, what is it?
Bowling? Like bowling alley bowling?
Like 100%, like bowling alley bowling.
Wow.
The cover of it is a guy in a bowling alley.
Uh-huh.
Bowling Alone.
Bowling Alone.
And so it's a pretty large book. I read it when I was doing my master's program, 10 years ago. And so basically what he did is a study of how people don't join things anymore.
Right.
And the generation, the World War II generation, if you will, you know, when they got back, happily enough, they're the ones that created, like, motorcycle clubs, right?
Yeah, they did.
Right? You know, they did things like this. The Elks clubs, the Lions clubs, the Rotary clubs, the Kiwanis clubs, the Moose lodges, all those things grew right after the World War II generation came home from the war.
Right.
And they created this community organization, very much involved in the community organizations. And the next generation after that, which is the baby boomers, they weren't interested in doing the things that their fathers and mothers did. They weren't joining the bridge clubs, the country clubs, those things in big numbers. You know, and so the reason why he's bowling alone is Robert Putnam talks about how these bowling alleys, you know, are closing down because no one is bowling any longer.
Right.
And I think about my dad. My dad, like, from now, I was born, I'll age myself. I was born in 1970. And in the 70s, my dad was on two bowling leagues. He would bring us around to the bowling alleys. I mean, it's funny. I remember as a kid, everybody's smoking. They're all drinking beers. You know, you're running around playing pinball machines.
Pinball
right?
machines, like, yeah, pinball, okay.
Right? I remember when, like, you know, like the Space Invaders came out and Asteroid, those video games, you know. Ask my dad for quarters, and you go play, right?
Uh-huh.
So that's what we did as a kid. And there's bowling leagues. And now I have to self admit, I was not interested in doing bowling leagues when I got older. You know what I mean? And it, you know, being the same age as my dad was then, I don't belong to any major organizations. You know what I mean? So the idea of having those community groups that were doing the things in the past have faded away,
right?
And think about our veterans, too. Like, our veterans today, the Afghanistan, the post-9/11 veterans, they're not joining the VA. They're not joining the VFW. They're not joining the American Legion as they were before. Those agencies are fading away, right?
Yeah.
The older generation dies off.
Yeah.
And why is that? Why don't we do community groups any longer? And I think that's one of the things that you're trying to change a little bit with a group like Civil Defense.
Yes.
Is really engaging the community to be part of the community again. Now, I did a lecture and we talked about the resiliency of the community. And one of the things I talk about here is the Neighbor for Neighbor program and the concept of making a friend, knowing who your neighbor is. You know, most of us in the here in the United States, and I say most of us are talking about the urbanized areas, which is Los Angeles, New York City, and whatnot, right? We are more likely to know more about somebody who lives 1,000 miles away or greater than we do somebody who lives 100 feet away.
Right.
Right? In the condo right next door to you, if you live in New York, or the apartment next door to you, if you live in New York City, or like the house that's next door to you, living in Orange County, California.
Right. Right.
We're less likely to know anything about them. Right? I mean, I know my neighbors fairly well, but I mean, like, I don't know everything about them, like, where I know people on Facebook for, like, all crazy things about them. Right?
Yeah.
Because we don't engage in our neighborhoods the way we used to. There's not block parties like that. And so I think taking the concept of what you have with Civil Defense and really laying that out to the community and saying, hey, let's have an emergency preparedness block party. Why not? Right? Let's see what you know. And I'm not telling people to say, oh, everything you have in your house, you know, and put it on a piece of paper. And that can be really, understanding, make yourself a little raw and vulnerable. Right? I get that. But what I'm saying is, like, understand, like, the guy who lives three doors down, all right, he's 97 years old. Understand that when there's an earthquake, I need to go over to check to make sure he's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because he can't get around very well.
Right, you know? I mean, understanding that, you know, the guy that lives down at the corner of our street, he's a general contractor, and I'm sure he probably has some tools in his garage that if we needed to get into that guy's house, well, I could go and say, hey, man, I don't know his name, and I could say it on the air here, but hey, we need to get into what's his name's house. Let's use some of your tools and get it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, just knowing that, you know, like, I don't need to know what's inside of this house, but understanding that he's a general contractor, probably has some pretty good knowledge, you know?
Right.
Knowing that I'm a trained medic, that if something goes sideways, that they can rely on me to do some medical stuff if I need to.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
For the neighborhood. Those things are really important. Like, you know, my neighbors to the right of me, they, you know, they're, the young man that lives there is a pharmacist, right? Knowing that he has training those things are important to understand and know your neighbor's outlet.
Yeah.
And I think what you're doing is really building upon that and making it a little bit more global.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is kind of a struggle to get people involved, but I think part of the problem is they don't realize the need. There's, you know, I'm a little bit older than you. I'm 12 years your senior. So, I grew up in the 60s. And, so I had a firsthand experience with civil defense towards the end of its life. It's, a little different. Well, it's a lot different now than it was back then. There was a lot more community. I mean, we used to leave, go someplace, like go to the grocery store or the mall or something, never lock the house. Now, you know, right. If you don't lock the house and you go away, you know, some neighborhoods, you're not going to have a house. You know, we had a threat back when I was young of a nuclear exchange with the old Soviet Union. And that was what everybody worried about. And then, you know, the more information that came out, well, you know, some of this preparedness stuff may not be, may not be what we really need to do. So there was
You mean duck and cover?
Well, duck and cover, you know, that was in school, but it different administrations, presidential administrations went either for civil defense or very little support for civil defense. And so it was a big problem along the way because there was too many politics involved. And, it kind of grew out of favor with the public too, because there was just too much all the time. And so they wanted to get on with their life and do different things and not go to civil defense meetings, I guess. But we've got more of a threat today with the nation states that are arrayed against us. We've got Russia still. We've got China, which is actually the bigger threat than Russia ever was. And we've got North Korea, which is the little brother to China. They're goofing around right now and still working on their program when, you know, they were supposed to be shutting it down. So then we've got Iran. Iran is trying to catch up with where North Korea is at. And then we've got terrorism.
You know, you know what I think is interesting too about that,
uh-huh,
is that I think when I was a kid, obviously, you know, the whole threat of the Soviet Union was real, right?
Right.
I mean, we heard about it, we learned about it, it was on TV. I mean, you know, when I was 1983, one of the big movies that came out was the original Red Dawn movie, you know,
yeah,
where the high school kids fought the Soviet Union. You know, and that was something that, I mean, whether it's propaganda or whether it was real, and that was something that was in our minds all the time. But today with it's hard to say, you know, where the threat's really coming from, and I think that people are overwhelmed with that. So one of the issues that we have today with people not understanding where the threat's coming from, right? Because, I mean, realistically, terrorism is really, you can't say who the enemy is and where they're coming from. We don't know what's domestic and what's homegrown, you know, terrorism, what's internationally supported terrorism.
Right.
You know, those.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have the extreme left, you have the extreme right, you have, obviously the Muslim terrorism, think about Elf and Elf, right? You got the Earth Liberation Front and the Animal Liberation Front. I mean, they've been doing terroristic stuff for years, right?
Oh, yeah. Decades.
Burning down, car dealerships and apartment complex stuff. You know, so terrorism is, and that's the only problem too, is that we define terrorism into these little boxes of the extreme terrorism coming from Islamic terrorism. If you think about Columbine, which is not really terrorism, but could be looked at that way. Or if you take a look at Oklahoma, right? The Oklahoma bombing.
Right.
You know, the domestic terrorism, stuff like this. So, I mean, it's out there. And I know that the FBI and the police departments are doing a great job of trying to stop it and st- out the few attack plans or planned attacks that were out there. The problem is that with the FBI and the local police departments, we got to be 100%, right? We can't be 99.9% because that 0.1% gets through. I mean, that's the Boston bombing,
right?
You know, and then the other thing too is when you have people talking about these things, and then they add like the anti or the you know, the anti-government, the conspiracy theories that some people come up with, and then you go, oh, these guys are the black, you know, helicopter tinfoil hat wearing people, and so then those guys put too much noise out there, and then the people go, well, who do we believe, right? Because you got, you know, George Norrie on, you know, Red Eye Radio over the you know, talking about, you know, being anally probed by an alien,
and yeah.
Then next thing you know, right, then you got Alex Jones out there running his mouth with craziness. It's hard to have a conversation with somebody without them thinking that I don't know where to go. And so what happens when you have all this noise? People shut down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they just don't, it's just too much information, too much stuff to filter through. You don't know what's true. You don't know what's fake. You know, you get the guy who doesn't believe in the government, saying stuff. You get the guy who, you know, talks about space aliens coming down, you know, and then shapeshifters and all this craziness. And then, you know, you're like, I don't want to listen to this dude because he sounds like he's a tinfoil hat wearing black helicopter, you know, guy. And so
right.
We're not listening to him anymore.
Right. Yeah.
And so, I think when you come up with that type of stuff and then people think it's that way, it's easy to shut down. So, you know, you have to have a strong support from your local government, right?
Yes.
At the end of the day.
Yes. And part of that, Todd, is if the local government issues a resolution in there, whether it's a city council or board of supervisors for the county, if they issue a resolution that lets people know, look, this is what we have investigated, and we believe that these are the threats that people should be aware of. And, you know, in my guide that I have for our new American civil defense structure, I list a couple sample resolutions in there, but the fact that they issued a resolution notifies the population of that jurisdiction, hey, this is what we believe are valid threats, in addition to, or in a higher level than the normal things that happen around here. So we have to be aware, we have to prepare, and we have to be able to respond to these other types of threats. And it's a building process.
For sure. And that's one thing too, is like, I think we do this poorly. I've said this a gazillion times, and not new to anybody who's ever heard me, but one is that we do like sirens really well, right?
The do what now?
Police officers and like sirens. Police officers.
Oh yeah, yeah,
fire
yeah,
trucks,
yeah.
Right. We do that really well. We can if the you know a 9/11, our guys got out there and saved lives and did a great job.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
At the Oklahoma bombing, they went out there and saved lives, did a great job. Right. But once we put the fire trucks and the police cars, you know, back, fire trucks are back at the barn, the police cars are back at patrol, you know, the planning portion of it, the recovery portion of it, the mitigation portion of it, we do okay, so-so. But what happens is that the populace, the people, the residents, the
right.
jurisdiction that you're
yeah.
in, you know, they go on, they get busy, they go on there every day, and it goes back to Robert Putnam. Alone.
We
get so busy, we get so wrapped up in our individual lives that we forget to. Going back with Robert Putnam with Bowling Alone again, I think if we talk to the people and not get into the existential threat,
right?
Which means like, and talk about just, and it sounds bad, right? And it sounds terrible because, you know, you can't go, you need to be prepared for a cyber attack on our financial system. So you need to be prepared for a cyber attack on our electrical grid. You need to be prepared for a guy going down the street in a car going to the, you know, to your mall and blowing it up. You need to be prepared for the crazy dude with a gun. You need to be and like all that stuff is just overwhelming, right?
Yeah.
But if we could talk about the civil defense aspect of being prepared for the everyday disaster,
right?
Whether it's the flood, fire, tornado, hurricane, you know, earthquake type stuff.
Yeah.
Be prepared to take care of the people who live in the house to the left of you, and the people who live in the house to the right of you, and for your family. I think a neighbor for neighbor program, like what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
I think when, like I said, if you're taking care of that, you're taking care of the person left of you, the person right of you, and your family. I think it's an easier pill to sell to people than the idea of these existential threats. Even though we should talk about them and be part of it, because even in the CERT program, we discuss terrorism, and I think in the CERT program we should add cyber issues as well, because they're real.
Yeah.
We're being hit every day by cyber attacks. They're looking left and right. We know those things exist. We know the terrorism exists. You know, none of it's fake, right?
Yeah.
But whether people can eat it or not is a different story.
Yeah. Have you read the latest emergency management legislation that your state passed on September 11th of 2018?
That California passed?
Yes. Yes. It's awesome legislation. If they actually put it into effect, it looks like they've gone farther than anybody else that I've found. I've got a small collection of state legislatures' laws that deal with emergency preparedness and the electrical grid and things like that. I'll send it to you. It's fantastic. I don't have it available right now. Otherwise, I'd give you the number of the bill. But it talks about some very important things, and it talks about the grid being vulnerable to electromagnetic pulse, to solar flares, otherwise known as coronal mass ejections, and physical attack. And so, whoever wrote that legislation was very cognizant of the real threats. Matter of fact, one of the physical threats that we've had is an attack on the power station in San Jose.
Right.
I can't think of the name of
it.
I'm sorry?
Mayfair. The name of the place, the name of the power plant.
Yeah, I can't.
Yeah.
Anyways, but, you know, there were three guys with AK-47s going in there and shooting things up. But they also got into they broke into a control box and shut off the alarm system and stuff, before they did their dirty deed with the AKs. So some Navy SEALs went out there and surveyed it and said, hey, this is more than just a vandalism. This is a real, real dry run.
Well, and right after that occurred, all those power stations had physical security officers put in there. They had a couple other times when they were throwing some acid bombs over the fence.
Oh, wow.
Like that. So, yeah, I mean,
yeah, it was Metcalf. Like Metcalf substation. That's what it was.
Yep. And these are real deal, right?
Yeah. This has been good, Todd. It's been great having you on the show and great discussion, and I look forward to doing this again here real soon, having you as a guest host on some of the initial interviews that we do with people, and I think we work pretty good as a team.
I think so too, Preston. Awesome, and thank you so much for having me on, and I look forward to doing some more things with you.
All right, Todd. Thanks again for being on Civil Defense Radio, and we will talk to you real soon.